tonight. That's the ticket. The Democratic presidential running mates uniting on stage for the first time.
I am incredibly honored by this responsibility, and I'm ready to get to work.
Joe Biden and Kamala Harris trying to reach out to a new generation. But how might her past actions as a prosecutor impact the race for the White House? Plus, the tribe turning the tide, the Navajo Nation fighting for its life.
Things that we're doing here on the Navajo Nation is working.
Once teeming with COVID-19 cases, now how one community took matters into their own hands to curb a killer.
Nightline starts right now with Byron Pitts.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Tonight, with just 83 days left until Election Day, presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden and running mate Senator Kamala Harris stepping out together for the first time today and already on the offensive. Here's ABC's Janae Norman.
This is a moment of real consequence for America. Everything we care about. It's all on the line.
This afternoon in Delaware, the official debut of the Joe Biden-Kamala Harris ticket, the former vice president and his history-making choice.
This morning, all across the nation, little girls woke up, especially little black and brown girls, who so often feel overlooked and undervalued in their communities. But today, just maybe, they're seeing themselves for the first time in a new way.
Joe, I'm so proud to stand with you. And I do so mindful of all the heroic and ambitious women before me, whose sacrifice, determination, and resilience makes my presence here today even possible.
The candidates walking out with masks on, socially distant, and almost entirely alone in a high school gym. The reality of campaigning during a pandemic. It was Biden's first significant event in 5 months, both he and Harris taking direct aim at President Trump.
Donald Trump has already started his attacks, calling Kamala, quote, nasty, whining about how she is, quote, mean to his appointees. It's no surprise. Because whining is what Donald Trump does best.
He inherited the longest economic expansion in history from Barack Obama and Joe Biden. And then, like everything else he inherited, he ran it straight into the ground.
The chance to witness history not lost on supporters gathered outside the gym. My colleague Mary Bruce talking to them.
When I heard that he was picking Kamala Harris, I had to sit for a minute because it really was, and I told somebody earlier that it really was breathtaking.
Harris is the daughter of immigrants, a Jamaican father and Indian mother who met fighting for civil rights. Now, as the first woman of color on a major political party ticket, she's become a symbol for many of what's possible.
For me, she checks off all of the boxes. She comes from a very diverse, multicultural background. She has a 30-plus year career in fighting for what's right.
The power of this moment also hitting home for Stacey Johnson Batiste, who's been friends with Harris since they were kids.
She stood up for me. So when we were in kindergarten, there was a boy that had taken my art project and threw it on the ground and broke it. And she said something, got in between him and me, and, you know, he got so upset. And we were kids that he picked up a rock, hit her in the head. And I think she still has that scar to this day. You know, that's the spirit, the fighter in her, standing up for what's right and wanting to take care of people.
There would be no Senator Harris as our VP without the courageous, bold candidacy of Shirley Chisholm back in 72 with Ida B. Wells.
Amy Allison is the founder of She the People, a group dedicated to getting women of color elected. She hosted a presidential forum last year that included then-candidate Harris.
We don't just want to be the backbone vote. We want to govern. We want to shape the future of the country. We want to shape the political agenda. Now we're in a position to do that.
When I saw a broken justice system, I became a lawyer to try and fix it.
Harris was California's top cop, serving as attorney general from 2011 to 2017. She was the first black, first Asian American, and first woman to hold the job in the state's history. While Biden cites her prosecutorial background as a reason for picking her, some take issue with her decisions on policing.
Has Senator Harris demonstrated a willingness to re-examine those past views?
She's got a real difficult job ahead. It's hard to run away from years and years and years of prosecuting black and brown bodies in the manner in which she did, based upon the conversations I've had with grassroots leaders. She's got a mighty tall task ahead of her in terms of convincing them that she's not the same person that she was all those years when she was California's top cop.
Over the years, she's changed her position on various issues.
Senator Harris, you released your plan for...
My colleague Lindsay Davis pressed her on that in a debate last fall.
You used to oppose the legalization of marijuana, now you don't. You used to oppose outside investigations of police shootings, now you don't. You've said that you changed on these and other things because you were, quote, swimming against the current, and thankfully the currents have changed. But when you had the power, why didn't you try to effect change then?
So there have been, I'm glad you asked me this question, and there have been many distortions of my record. I made a decision that if I was going to have the ability to reform the system, I would try to do it from the inside.
Do you think that she needs to be better prepared to defend that record?
Many believe she is political to a fault, that she will morph herself into the position that best suits the situation that she is in. And you know, that's where candidates get into trouble.
She needs to craft a message that looks forward while also acknowledging the shortcomings of the past, because that's what they were.
During her run for president last year, the senator released a criminal justice reform plan that would, in part, end mandatory minimum sentences, the death penalty, solitary confinement, and cash bail. This summer, she teamed up with Senator Cory Booker to introduce the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act, which in part would ban chokeholds and no-knock warrants, call for independent investigations of police misconduct, and establish a national police misconduct registry.
But what's important to us right now is who she's showing up as right now. She was one of the first senators to be out with protesters in solidarity in the wake of the murder of George Floyd. She called for justice for Breonna Taylor. She has sponsored legislation to protect essential workers. Majority essential workers are black and brown women.
What did Senator Harris immediately give the Biden campaign that Joe Biden didn't have without her?
She comes very qualified to the job, and there's no question about it. For Joe Biden, who has been accused of being pulled to the left, she brings the perception of a centrist ticket, which I think is appealing to independents.
So far, Team Trump struggling to find a line of attack against Harris. On a call with reporters, Trump surrogates called Harris, a former district attorney, both too soft on criminals and also too tough.
I don't want someone who says that they are not going to be tough on hardened criminals.
But then,
she wants to keep inmates locked up in overcrowded prisons.
In an interview with Sinclair Broadcasting today, Trump once again calling Harris nasty.
She was the nastiest of anybody in the Senate. She was the worst, meanest person to Judge Kavanaugh, who became Justice Kavanaugh. I've never seen anything like it.
When they use the word nasty, it's shorthand for denigrating the integrity and the humanity of a woman. It's also racist.
Harris, following in the footsteps of Geraldine Ferraro and Sarah Palin, is the third woman to run for the second highest office in the land.
Ferraro and Palin faced sexist attacks. That's the nature of our political culture. There's something, though, unique about a woman of color and a black woman being in that role that attracts an even more sinister combination of racism and sexism. That's what Senator Kamala Harris is facing now, and she will continue to face.
I think the way Kamala is going to deal with attacks on her character is by sticking to the issues, sticking to the truth, and not getting derailed by mudslinging.
Harris is readying for the battle ahead, and so is her running mate.
Kamala Harris has had your back, and now we have to have her back.
I couldn't be prouder to be by his side, running to represent you, the people.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Navajo Nation bouncing back from a vicious battle with the foreign invader, flattening the coronavirus curve on the reservation. But the fight far from over as officials seek to keep their most vulnerable safe during the pandemic. Here's ABC's Matt Gutman.
In the expanse of red rocks where the Navajo Nation suffered one of the highest COVID-19 infection rates per capita in the country, tonight, a flicker of hope. The numbers here are on the decline.
We have never gone through something like this in this magnitude before.
When cases started to rise in April, Navajo President Jonathan Nez listened to the scientists and ordered some of the strictest measures in the country, including a 57-hour weekend curfew and mandatory mask wearing.
How many daily new cases were there, and how many new cases per day are there now?
We were having days that were over 100 COVID positive cases a day. As of, you know, this discussion from yesterday to today, 22 new cases. And I believe our lowest was 7 a couple of days ago. You know, we had one of the most stringent public health orders in the country, and the Navajo people saw that it worked. And now not many people are complaining.
Yeah, I would say much more stringent than the mask wearing was the curfew. I don't think there's any place like it in the country that had curfews nightly and then over the weekends as well.
We used our sovereign ability to govern ourselves, and that also included these very stringent public health orders. Things that we're doing here on the Navajo Nation is working, and we cannot let down.
We saw firsthand in April cases piling up, motels used to house and isolate the ill. The Navajo Nation's population of about 170,000 has access to only about 20 ICU beds. We met Dr. Sriram Shamasunder, who was practicing emergency medicine from the back of his car.
How's your breathing?
But there were limits to what the team could do.
So EMS has just showed up because the gentleman is telling the folks here at COPE and Dr. Sri that he's got shortness of breath, asthma.
Dr. Sriram is the co-founder of the health initiative at UCSF. He teamed up with locals like the COPE program's Nitumagamo Champagne. They established rounds at this motel in Gallup, New Mexico, where the unsheltered and the sick could go to get off the street and away from their extended families.
So mostly the headaches bothering you?
Yeah.
No, any blurry vision?
Amid an onslaught of COVID infections, 4 motels were being used as respiratory clinics.
How have you been feeling?
I'm feeling good.
Dr. Eileen Ulku, making her rounds of COVID patients, her office is in those bags.
If you had told me 3 weeks ago that I would be starting elderly patients in a room by themselves without family members supporting them on oxygen and keeping them in a motel, closed up in a room, I would never have believed it.
But even those motels filled up, so they converted a gym into a clinic.
We went back there in May when the per capita COVID infection rate among the Navajo soared to that past of New York and New Jersey, the area's biggest hospital in Gallup, New Mexico, reaching capacity.
From what we're hearing, this could be called the epicenter of COVID in the country right now.
Yes, you're totally right.
The poverty and lack of infrastructure in this area, spanning Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah, making it much worse.
The Navajo Nation is larger than West Virginia, but 40% of the people who live here don't have electricity, and 30% don't have access to running water, which is why they need to pump water at wells like this.
Since early March, grassroots groups have worked to provide food and water. The Navajo and Hopi Families Relief Fund raising over $5.7 million, setting up makeshift hand-washing stations and distributing them around the reservation.
It's just one fix to address the hygiene issue.
In the vastness of the reservation, under the shadow of Chimney Butte, is where Dr. Michelle Tom grew up.
Actually, you can see where I'm from.
Also, without running water or power. She's now the only Navajo emergency physician at this urgent care clinic in Winslow, Arizona.
You're getting people pulling up to this parking lot. They had to be intubated here, even though this is not technically an ICU or a hospital. It's an urgent care.
Yes.
She says the closest ICU facility is at least an hour away by helicopter or 3 hours in an ambulance. Of course, it's no longer a hospital. And growing up, Dr. Tom says she never saw medical professionals with a face like her own.
I never saw a Native American as a nurse or a doctor. Sometimes there's a disconnect when language and cultures are not meeting. We know that just by studies and even by experience, you're not going to have the best healthcare.
She left her family and moved to an apartment an hour away to try to minimize the risk of infecting the group of people she's trying to save.
My job is immensely hard because I have such a connection to my people and to my land. Our elders are our teachers, our protectors. They hold all of the key elements that we need to have a strong sense of identity.
Dorothy Scott was one of 11 people living in this traditional hut with her family when disease and death struck.
As you were burying your one son who had just died from COVID, you heard that your husband had just died.
I got a call saying that my husband passed away in the house.
Of the 11 family members, 8 were COVID positive. 2 of them died. Those left behind were split into 2 rooms under strict quarantine. But for the first time in a week, they were allowed out for that round of hugs.
What do you hope for the days to come?
I hope that the Navajo people will continue to do the things that help bring the numbers down.
For Nightline, I'm Matt Gutman.
And finally tonight, love is worth the wait. With a bunch of red balloons, a bouquet of red roses, and a pocket full of surprises, Jeffrey Miller really knows how to propose.
Firstborn is after me, the name.
His longtime girlfriend, Gloria Alexis, had been in the hospital. So last week, when they were finally reunited at their assisted living facility in Brooklyn, New York, he knew exactly what he wanted to do. Sealing their engagement with a yes and a kiss. Oh, by the way, Jeffrey is 76, Gloria is 71. The wedding date? Well, they're still deciding on that. No rush, kids. 1 Corinthians, love is patient. That's Nightline for this evening. You can catch our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here, same time tomorrow. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.